we can actually realize, you know, you understand God, actually you controlling everything. Very basic question, but I mean, I cannot, I don't know very much.
What did you say? See, you cannot convince someone unless you are convinced. The most important thing is you have to convince yourself first. Srila Prabhupada, in the very early days of the Hare Krishna movement, can everyone hear? You can hear? You can hear? Hare Om. When there was hardly any devotees, he was sitting with some of his leading disciples, and he explained that if all of us, that just the small handful of devotees that we have now, if they were convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhood and that he's non-different than his name, then we could make the whole world Krishna conscious in 18 days. And then he looked at each one of his leaders right in the eyes. And when Srila Prabhupada looked in your eyes, he was looking through your mind, through your intelligence, through your ego, and right into your soul. And he turned to each one individually, and he said, "Are you convinced?" And nobody could say anything. They were silent. Purity is the force. We can study very scrutinizingly the philosophy, which is necessary. If we are going to present the proper conclusions, we must understand the conclusions. But we have to believe it. We have to have faith. We have to have conviction if we really want that knowledge to penetrate the hearts of somebody else. I'll give an example. In the Western world, people are becoming so frustrated with chemical medicine that millions of people are taking to natural types of medicine. I know that's not very encouraging for all you because you're medical students. What are you doing? Huh? How do you know? So, many people are taking to various supplements for vitamins and natural medicines and natural foods. The biggest problem is, even if you have the proper herb or the proper medicine, if you take it, it's a 95% chance that it's not assimilated in the body. It just goes right through. So the big challenge is how to get that medicine so that it will work and it will benefit a person. So there's a process called chelation. You know what that means? Chelation? Where you connect or you combine different either chemicals or herbs with the original medicine that creates an atmosphere that it breaks down. It breaks down properly in your system, and it is assimilated by your system. Otherwise, it's useless. So Krishna consciousness is the perfect philosophy. Every single answer to every single question in the entire creation is answered through the Krishna conscious philosophy. And it's based on the ultimate authority. It's based on the authority of Krishna. Mata paratanam nyanyat kinchirasti dananjayat mai sarvamidam protam sutri manigana iva. Krishna says there is no truth superior to me. Everything is resting on me as pearls are strung on a thread. Vedaischa sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta krid veda vedeva chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of all the Vedic literatures, and I am the object to be known through all the Vedas. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat puranitam. And no religion is considered to have any authenticity unless it is originated by God himself. No human being, however scholarly, however mystic, can create a religious system that will really take you to God. Only Krishna. Evam parampara pratam idam rajashayavam sakalanend mahata yogo nashta paranta. And Krishna explains that this pure knowledge spoken by me, it is to be understood through disciplic succession, where the original message, the original essence, is preserved. Jnanam teham savijnanam idam bhaksham yasheshata yaj gyatva neha bhulyam yaj gyatavyam abhishishyate. Krishna explains that this knowledge contains everything of both the relative and spiritual worlds. Everything is contained. And anyone who applies their mind and intelligence to Krishna conscious philosophy will be convinced on every level. So we must know that our philosophy is perfect because it's Krishna's philosophy. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. But if when we're preaching to another, if we want that philosophy to be assimilated in their hearts, digested in their hearts, not just go in one ear and out the other, it has to be combined with our own conviction, our own faith, and our own purity. These are the chelating elements that makes the pure medicine of Krishna conscious philosophy digestible in a person's heart. We have to be convinced of what we're speaking. We have to have faith in what we're speaking. And we have to have, to whatever degree of purity, it will change people's lives. It will cure this, the disease of material contraction within people's hearts. So someone may argue, is there a God? And if you read Srila Prabhupada's books, there are every argument to prove that there is a God. And the scriptures, every argument. And we can present some arguments to you. But you will not convince people by your arguments alone. The arguments must be there. But you have to be convinced of it yourself to really convince another. So the main thing is, physician, heal thyself. You have heard that saying? Doubt is a disease. And our business in this world, as devotees of the Lord, is to try to cure the disease of doubt in people's hearts. But first we have to go to that physician who can heal our doubts. We have to be the humble servant of someone who can really help to heal our doubts. And simultaneously, on his behalf, we try to heal the heart, the doubts of others. So there are many examples which are so obvious that even the most materialistic person, if he just opens his mind to try to be a little bit sane, he must believe that there is a Supreme God. It's totally irrational, illogical, and foolish to consider that there's not a God. And some of the greatest PhD scientists don't even have basic common sense to see the truth. Everywhere we look, whatever we see, you see a tree. Where did that tree come from? How was that tree born? From a little tiny seed. You know that story of Narada Muni when he met the Brahmin and the cobbler? You know this story? Raise your hand if you've heard this story. Raise your hand if you have not heard this story. You've heard it. Anyways, it's a simple story, but Srila Prabhupada personally told the story. He said Narada Muni was on his way to Vaikuntha. And he met a Brahmin who was performing puja, and he was chanting nice mantras, and he was very learned, and so many people were coming and touching his feet and asking him for blessings. He was a very, very famous guru type of Brahmin. So he spoke with Narada for some time, and then Narada said, I am going to Vaikuntha to see Narayan. And he said, oh, when you go to Vaikuntha, please ask Narayan when I will come back to him, when I will attain mukti and go to Vaikuntha to see him. Narada said, yes, I will ask. Then as he was traveling, he came upon a very poor outcast. He was like a sudra, a cobbler, very poor. Everyone in society just, they walk by. They don't want to look at these types of people. And he was illiterate. He was not educated. And he offered Narada a nice seat, little watcher. Oh, you are going to Vaikuntha? Please ask Lord Narayan, will there ever be a time when I will be qualified where I could see him and be with him? So Narada Muni went to Vaikuntha. And after having the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and chanting on, playing his veena and singing so many nice songs, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Narada said, there was a Brahmin and a cobbler, they both asked me when they will go back to Godhead. And Lord Narayan said, that Brahman, he will come back to Godhead after millions and millions of births. And the cobbler, he will come back to Godhead immediately after leaving his body. In fact, he will see me even in this very life. So Narada was thinking, how is this possible? One is a guru. One is a very high Brahmin, so learned, and the other is nothing. So he had this doubt in his mind. Why is this? So you know the Supreme Personality of Godhead is within everyone's heart. He knows your doubts. He knows your thoughts. He knows your desires. He knows everything, inside and out. You cannot hide anything from Krishna. So he said, if they ask you what I was doing when you saw me, tell them that I was putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. Narada was very much confused by this statement. But with faith, he just offered his obeisances and he went to see the Brahmin. Ah, when will I go back to Godhead? You saw Narayan? Yes. You will go back to Godhead after millions and millions and millions of births. And the Brahmin was so insulted. He was so offended by this. He said, what is this nonsense? Do you know how many mantras I know? Do you know how many slokas I have memorized? Do you know how many disciples I have? Do you know how many pujas and yajnas I have performed? What nonsense are you speaking after millions and millions of births? You are a rascal. You are not a real sadhu. You have not even seen Narayan. I don't believe you. If you saw him, what was he doing? He was putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. What nonsense, rest. Nobody puts elephants, nobody could do that. Get out of here. You are bogus. You are a cheater. Get out. So Narada left. He was thinking, if I was Lord Narayan, I would also not want him for at least millions and millions of years. So then he went to the cobbler. And the cobbler asked, oh, you saw Narayan, my lord. I am the most fallen. I am the most undeserving. Will there ever be a time, even after millions and millions of births, that he will ever give me his causeless mercy and allow me to come back to him? And Narada said that he will reveal himself to you in this very life. And when you leave this body, you will return back home, back to God. And the Brahmin said, oh, how wonderful. How kind. I have no qualities, but he is so merciful. Please tell me, what was my most merciful, loving Lord doing when you saw him? And Narada Muni said, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler said, oh, how nice. Threading elephants through needles' eyes. So nice. You believe this? You believe he was putting the elephant through the eye of a needle? He said, yes, of course. He said, you see this banyan tree we are sitting under? You see, on this tree, there are thousands and thousands of fruits. And in each fruit, there are hundreds of tiny little seeds. And do you know, my lord, in each one of these seeds, he has put one of these huge, gigantic banyan trees. You plant the seed in the ground, and from that little seed comes out a massive tree. Can any scientist do that? Is it happening by accident, by chance? Is the sun rising and the sun setting at a particular time by chance? Do you know astronomers? They can calculate exactly what time the sun is going to rise and set any time in the past and any time in the future. And it will always, to the second, be correct. This is how precision this universe is operating. The sun is evaporating water from the ocean, which is salty. No human being can use the ocean water. And he brings it up in the sky to become a cloud. And what is a cloud? What an unbelievable miracle every cloud is. If we are not convinced of the existence of God every time we see a cloud, we're crazy fools. Do you know when there's a drought, they have to bring water into a place, right? And it's a big problem. They have to take water in big tankers, in big trucks, and then it runs out so fast. When was it? Last year. There was a flood in America, the biggest flood in the history of America. The Mississippi River just became so big, it just became miles and miles, so wide that it was destroying everything around. And people's whole homes were washed away. And you know what the biggest problem was? Although everybody was living in water, and everybody was, their homes were destroyed by water. Do you know what the biggest problem was? There was no water. Because the water was so contaminated. Because they put all of these dangerous, deadly pesticides and fertilizers in the fields. And the Mississippi River just swelled up in all those fields, so all the deadly pesticides went into the water. So although there was water everywhere and in everything, they couldn't drink the water and they couldn't use the water for cooking. So people were starving because there was no water, although everything around them was water. So the government was spending billions of dollars to bring drinking water to people who were in flood areas. Anyways, it was a massively expensive enterprise to bring drinking water to them. Because you have to get vessels, you have to get boats, everything. A cloud. Do you know how much water is in one rain cloud? You've seen the monsoon rains here in Bombay? One cloud, if it empties, the whole city is shut down. The streets become rivers. There's floods everywhere. The ocean swells up. Huh? You have seen? One rain could shut down this whole city. How many gallons of water does it take to shut down the city of Bombay? But it's all contained in one cloud. How much water do you think that weighs? How much is the weight of that water? Millions of tons of water in one cloud. And yet that cloud is so light that it's lighter than the air. If it wasn't lighter than the air, it wouldn't float, it would fall. Right? The cloud would just go just floats in the air. And yet, here's a vessel that's containing billions of tons of water, and it's so light that it's floating in the air. And not only that, but if you can take an airplane, you can fly right through it and not even get wet. Did you ever think of a cloud like this? What type of tanker does God make? And he doesn't need roads. He just takes a little wind and he can send that water tanker anywhere he wants. Everything within material nature, if you analyze it with an open mind, you'll see an inconceivable, unbelievable miracle. So precisionally done. How can this take place without an intelligence? Is it possible? It's totally irrational. There must be a supreme intelligence. Just to maintain this house takes so much mental efforts. What to speak of maintaining the entire creation? How all the planets, how the gravitational forces, how they're all in harmony. Keeping consistency. So therefore, is it more reasonable to accept that there is an intelligence behind all this? Or is it more reasonable to think that it's all happening by random chance? Which one? It's more reasonable to accept that there is a God behind everything. Now, if you want to know that God, you cannot by your own puny brain. You can only know God when God reveals himself to you. And he has. That same supreme absolute truth that has created everything within this phenomenal world descends into this world regularly. To reveal the truth of himself and to reveal the ways and the means by which we can know him, we can love him, and we can serve him. There are so many forms of education, but none of them can help solve the problem of suffering. None of them. Birth, old age, disease, and death. It is only the education directly being handed down through the disciplic succession by Krishna originally that can solve these problems. One time, devotees, they had a question for Srila Prabhupada about a particular conflict between an explanation by material scientists about the universe and what it says in the scripture. They were directly opposing one another. One of the common truths of science that everybody believes in the Word of God. So Prabhupada, he said, first of all, you must know that what's spoken by God is the absolute truth. And what's discovered by man is relative truths. And the absolute truth is the highest understanding of something. Relative truth may be a correct understanding of something on a very peripheral level. Huh? Or it may not even be true at all. It's just somebody's imperfect sense perception. But Srila Prabhupada said, ultimately, by following the scientists, will you be removed from the cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death. But by following the explanation of Krishna, you will be removed from the repetition of birth, old age, disease, and death. What is really of true importance? What do we want in our life? This we have to question. And of course, the Bhaktivedanta Institute, they have, in the most highly scientific terminology, explained the proof of the existence of God. But the basic principles that I just explained about the banyan tree and the cloud and the sun and the moon and the seasons, we don't need all these highly technical scientific explanations. It's so obvious. We only need these highly sophisticated scientific arguments because people have become so endlessly complicated in their false egos that you have to use the same type of, what is it? You use one thorn to take out, if you have a thorn in your foot, you use another thorn to take it out. They're so complicated that they can't understand anything that's not equally complicated. Huh? But a person who just looks at things in a simple and realistic way, simple arguments will give them complete confidence that yes, we should surrender to Krishna. Does that answer your question? So if you read the scriptures nicely, and you associate with devotees nicely, you'll get all the arguments to defeat anything. But our purpose is not to defeat people. By philosophical knowledge, you can defeat anyone. Krishna consciousness has it. But we don't care about defeating people. We want to change their hearts and change their lives. And if you want to do that, you have to chelate your philosophical arguments with conviction, faith, and purity in your own lifestyle. Because that conviction and faith and that purity will attract Krishna to manifest himself through what you do and what you say, to enter into a person's heart and to transform it. Is there any other questions? Whether Krishna is God? First of all, we accept on many levels. The scriptures declare throughout that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. The Brahma Samhita declares Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraham Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Who is a greater authority than Lord Brahma, the original progenitor of this material universe? He explains that Krishna is the Supreme Controller. He is the Absolute Truth. He is the cause of all causes. Everything emanates from him. That is Brahma's word. The Vedas explain, the original Vedas, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Shada Pashanti Suraya, that Vishnu and Krishna are same person. That Vishnu is the ultimate object of worship, the cause of everything that exists, and the great saints, they meditate and worship him. Krishna, when he appeared in this world in the Bhagavad Gita, he explained, Matta paratanam nanyat kinchid asti tananjaya. There is no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung on a thread. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartite. He said that I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavamam prabhadyate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, one who finally comes to the point of real knowledge, he surrenders to me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Krishna spoke it, and Arjuna, when he heard, he confirmed it. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Itam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharamam, Shushukam, Karatam Agnayam, Ahustvam Rishaya Sarve, Deva Rishir Naradastata, Asito Devalovya Sitra, Swayam Chayat Savishrimi. Arjuna said that you are the Supreme Brahman, you are the Supreme Purifier. And not only do I say this, but all the great saints and sages, Devala, Asita, Narada, Vyas, they all declare this of you. And the greatest human beings that have ever stepped foot on this earth, Shankaracharya, Narayana Parovyakdat, he declared that Krishna is the cause of all causes and is completely transcendental source of everything that exists. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbarakacharya, Vishnu Swami, Vallabhacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they all declare that Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the cause of all causes, the God of all gods. And Krishna, not only did he say it, and not only did all the great devotees confirm it, but he proved it. He did what nobody else could do. When he was only 7 years old, he lifted the Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. No mystic yogi can do this. He lived in 16,108 palaces simultaneously with 16,108 goddesses of fortune. And each one was living completely independent from all the others. Has anyone done this before? He revealed his Virat Rup, his universal form, to Arjuna, where Arjuna saw within Krishna's body the entire creation. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of all the worlds he saw within Krishna. So Krishna revealed by his personal behavior what nobody else could ever do. And he revealed the highest knowledge of himself. And it has been confirmed by all these great devotees. And what are the qualities of these great devotees? They're the most compassionate, the most loving, the most knowledgeable, the most self-controlled, the most benevolent people that have ever lived on earth. And they are declaring that Krishna is God. But we accept that in every religion, they are worshipping God. And essentially, they are worshipping Krishna, but different aspects of Krishna. There is no competition between religions. There's competition between egos, but not between religion. Ego has nothing to do with religion. Ego is a material quality, born of forgetfulness of the truth of God. Religion and yoga mean the same thing, to reunite with God. Real religion brings harmony and unity, and ego creates disharmony and disunity. So what is the difference between Allah and Krishna? Or Jehovah, Yahweh, or Krishna? They are different understandings of the same one truth, different names and different manifestations of the one truth. But that one truth, according to the scriptures, is most perfectly and fully manifested in Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive one. In some religion, God is considered to be the Father. And if you do something wrong, he will punish you by throwing thunderbolts on you or by sending you to hell. Yes, this is an aspect of God, but it is a very lesser conception of God. God does those things, but not personally, through his various energies, through his various expansions. One time, a person came from Germany. He was a very highly educated, scientific person. And he came to India to try to understand who is the highest God. So he traveled for years to all the holy places of India. And finally he came to Calcutta, to the ashram of our Param Guru, Om Vishnupad Paramhamsa, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he said, in this temple I have understood who is the Supreme God. He said, because I have gone to some temples and I see gods holding swords. And I have seen some gods holding maces. And I have seen other gods holding Durga. She's holding so many weapons. And he said, and I have seen Shiva. He's sitting and meditating. And I have seen Kali. She's holding hatchet. And I have seen Narayan. He is also holding chakras and clubs. And I have seen Kartikeya. He's holding a spear. And who else? So many. He said, all of these gods, they are doing hard work. It's hard work slicing people's heads off. And it's hard work defending with clubs. And it's hard work sitting, doing tapasya and meditating. But Krishna, he's just playing a flute. He's simply enjoying. So no doubt, these are all manifestations of God. But the highest principle of God is not that he's the creator, not that he's the protector, not that he's the destroyer. The highest principle of God is that he's the enjoyer. He has nothing to do with these other things. He lets his expansions do all these things, and he simply enjoys. If you cannot become God, but if with the farthest reaches of your imagination, if you were to take the position of God, would you want to just enjoy with loving devotees for the rest of your life? Or would you want to be cutting people's heads off and drinking blood and everything like that? Or sitting and meditating and doing tapasya? Which one? The highest conception of the Absolute is that he is the supreme enjoyer. And you can study all the religions of the world. And personally, to an extent, I have studied all the great religions of the world. And we have come to the same conclusion that all the Vaishnavacharyas have taught us. Krishna's tu Bhagavan, sorry. That yes, in every religion we are approaching the one supreme truth. But the one supreme truth in his most intimate and highest feature is Krishna. Vrindavan Chandra, who simply eternally reciprocating ecstatic ras, ecstatic love with his devotees, playing on his flute and enjoying. And when he wants to kill a demon, he won't do it as Govinda. He'll do it as Narayan. It is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam by the Acharyas that when Krishna was in Vrindavan, playing his flute, whenever a demon came, whether it be Trinavarta or Putana or Aghasura or any of these other demons, it was the Narayan feature within Krishna that would kill the demons. But Govinda, the Lord of Vrindavan, he was only playing with Yashoda and playing with gopis in the purest, highest feelings of love, spiritual love. So on many levels, we can understand that it is a fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the supreme object of love and devotion. Would you like to add anything, Kevin? Add something. Radha Kanchan, something. They are so humble. Is there any other questions? Yes. Some of you feel like this? Raise your hand if you feel like this. Sunita does not feel like this? You must understand that to serve Krishna means to perform your duty in Krishna consciousness. Arjuna also did not feel like fighting that war in Kurukshetra. In Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, Arjuna told Krishna, I will not fight. I don't like this. I don't feel like it. And he presented so many nice arguments, how it was contrary to his Krishna consciousness. But Krishna told him that you can best serve me by fighting. Therefore, you should fight. You should. Bodhi does not study in school simply because he wants a degree. A devotee doesn't study in school simply because of some hope of money in the future. a real devotee, whatever he or she does, is because it's the best way we can serve Krishna. And in medical college, there's a wonderful future in life by which you can serve Krishna through such a profession. And we see within our movement, our temple in Radha Gopinath Mandir, there are so many doctors, Vishaka's husband, Gaurakadish, Vishwarup, Abhimanu, Adi Keshav, Murlidhar, Kavandi, Kishori, they're all doctors. And they're utilizing their skills in such a way that they could really reach out to humanity and give dignity to their guru's mission. And with the respectability that they have, people hear what they have to say. And they're willing to see and be influenced by their example. See, if everyone in this movement was a useless sannyasi like me, or a nice brahmachari like Devamrit, or Kardama Muniji, or Radhakant Prabhu, people of society would think, that's very nice, they're surrendered. But what about me? Where do I fit in? Krishna consciousness is for everyone. Arjuna was not a brahmachari or a sannyasi. Arjuna had several wives. He was grihastha. And he was a very responsible military man. And because he performed his duties in Krishna consciousness, he taught everybody, according to whoever and whatever you're doing, how to be a perfect devotee and perfect your life. So we should be studying with the consciousness that whatever I'm learning is actually a service to Krishna, because I'm going to be using it all in Krishna's service. Arjuna was a perfect devotee, but he went to school. He studied at the ashram of Dronacharya. And every day Dronacharya gave certain lessons. And Arjuna was such a student that he would stay up all night practicing whatever he learned the day before, so that the next day he could perfectly display to his teacher that I have learned. And he became the favorite student of Drona for this reason. Such a student. Because he was studying in military science, he was perfecting it. That was his service. If you are studying in medical college, you do it well. You learn well. Because in the future, you want to use it for Krishna. Arjuna used everything he learned for Krishna. So in this way, you have to see your education as a service to Krishna. You should not see it as something separate. You shouldn't see that this is Maya and this is Krishna consciousness, and somehow or other I have to deal with both. You have to have the consciousness that it's Maya if I'm doing it for any other reason than Krishna's service. But I'm going to use this for Krishna's service, therefore learning it is also Krishna's service. And you can only have that consciousness while you're studying if you have nice, regular association of devotees. Otherwise, it's impossible. Because although your education can be used in Krishna's service and can be Krishna's service, the teachers, they're not teaching it with that idea. And 90% of the students, perhaps 99%, they're not coming to college with that idea. So what is going to keep that idea fresh and strong in your own heart? You must have association of devotees. You must have proper satsang, regular. They will keep your real mission and your real purpose for whatever you're doing alive and well in your heart. And you also must have strong sadhana. we must be regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books. We must be regularly chanting the holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
And we must regularly live a very pure life, a sinless life. And if we do if we accept all of these essential Krishna conscious principles, then we will have the vision and the inner strength by which we can carry on our studies and through become better and better devotees and prepare ourselves to go out into this world and do wonderful seva for Guru and Gauranga. Is that good? She already left her studies anyway. She's graduate, but she has a very high service now. She's become like mother for all students. Yes?
Last 3 years, we are hearing the same answer, like we have to study, but we are so weak, and actually after one day association, 2 hours Saturday, and then we are asked to go in again very difficult in the college.
Hmm.
And practically it is seen last 3 years that whenever the study session is more, and so many sincere people are coming and they want to actually serve Krishna, but due to studies they are not able to chant, then they are not able to attend morning arati. Then they stop associating and they just then they say, study is my business, I think I should pass. So it means really this education is necessary. People are living Krishna only. They are not coming to satsang, they are not chanting it.
It is not necessary. But it's a wonderful service if we do it in Krishna consciousness. It means we are not very sincere. Because those people that study, with great determination, what is the use? What is the value? It is all ignorance if it's not connected to Krishna. We have to understand that. We have to balance our lives. If to be first in your class, you have to give up your Krishna consciousness, then what is so great about being a first-class donkey? Huh? Donkeys carry big burdens on their back, you've seen? So your whole education is just like a burden. And you're like a donkey just carrying this big burden of all knowledge on your back. What is the use of such a life? We want to be Krishna conscious. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed that material education is nothing but maya, unless it is connected to Krishna. So therefore, with the same or more determination we have to complete our studies, we have to have more determination to perform our sadhana and to have the association of devotees. And you can do it. All of these people, because they're sincere. They're regularly associating with devotees, they're regularly chanting the holy names, and they're doing very well in their studies. You be the example to all of these other people who have weak hearts and no faith. This is the main reason we want students to get good grades. Because whether you get good grades or not, nobody really cares once you graduate, right? When a doctor has a diploma, do you ask him what grades he got? Huh? Nobody cares. If you pass, you're a doctor. Whether you have top grades or bottom grades, nobody will ever know after a few years. If you perform well, they'll come to you. Huh? So the reason why it's very important for you to get good grades is an example for others. It's preaching. How you can have nice Krishna conscious life and how you can make Krishna the priority of your life and still do well in school. And when other people who have weak hearts and weak faith see that you can do it, they understand, if he can do it, I can do it. If she can do it, I can do it. But if they see everybody who becomes a devotee drops out and does terrible in their studies, they'll think that I have to make a choice. Either I have to give up everything and become a brahmachari, or I have to just give up all Krishna consciousness and succeed in the world. You have to give them that conviction that they can be a first-class doctor for Krishna. They can be a first-class student for Krishna. So it is out of your compassion and your mercy that you should study to try to get good grades, to be a good example, to give hope to the people of this, of the college, and to all students throughout the world. It is a great service. Even someone who doesn't want to in any way pursue the line of his education. He wants to be a brahmachari. He wants to just live in the temple and preach. So what is biological science and all these things have to do with going out and preaching? But still, you'll find our devotees say, complete your education and get good grades. So that the people in the college who don't want to be brahmacharis, they'll see that somebody can continue their education, get good grades, and be a first-class devotee. And what you do when you leave the college, that is another thing. But while you're there, you have to understand that these students, you have to give hope and you have to give future to all of them by your example. Because the future leadership of the world is in the colleges today. Srila Prabhupada said, if we cannot make the college students Krishna conscious, there is no hope for any real morality or spirituality in the world in the future. Because every leader of every aspect of society is in the colleges now. All the politicians of tomorrow are in college now. All the lawyers, all the doctors, all the big, big business people that are in the future, they're all in the colleges now. If they become Krishna conscious, when they exceed in their field, they can do the greatest service to humanity. The society needs Krishna conscious government officials, Krishna conscious military, Krishna conscious doctors, lawyers, farmers. Every aspect of society is meant to be performed in Krishna consciousness. And when the leaders are Krishna conscious, naturally the people will follow. So there is a grave crisis within all the universities and colleges today. Because people are becoming so degraded and so materialistic that the future of the world is dim, bleak, and almost hopeless. And you are the hope for the world in the future. Don't give up. Give more hope to the world by giving a good example for others to follow this path. That is the greatest service you can be rendering at this time. You are in a key position being in the college today. So it is a service. But you will not perform your service right unless you are Krishna conscious. So you must establish your priorities and you must work hard. don't be a fanatic either way. Use your intelligence. That answer your question? No?
The first word is that Krishna consciousness should be priority. And just by the mercy of devotee, we started staying together and having aarti in the mangalarti in the morning and then chanting together. But now days are going, like we have seen many people, like always somebody has reason, like I studied up to 3 o'clock or tomorrow I have exam. Or somebody cannot study in association of duty, you want to go home. Or somebody says, you know, now it's final exam, so 6 months I won't come. So actually, really coming together and chanting is the priority. What we should do? We have to, which we have to cut? Like, we have to cut the aarti and chanting in the morning and then we can say, I study home and chant in the evening or whenever I will get time, but I'm chanting. Is not that enough? Somebody's argument that like, no, priority
should be made. Yes. It is a question of our sincerity. You're a doctor. If someone is given medicine, do they take the medicine according to their whims? Or do they take the medicine according to the prescription of the doctor? Huh?
According to
the prescription. Good evening. Thank you very much. The doctor doesn't say, here's the medicine, you just do what you like with it. He says you take 3 tablets 3 times a day. With water. Huh? And if you take the medicine according to the prescription, you will become better. It will have effect. If you take the medicine according to your own whims, or if you don't take it at all, then it will have minimal effect. Or no effect. So similarly, spiritually, we're all sick. We're all diseased. And we need medicine. And this is the medicine, to regular associate with devotees, to chant the holy names regularly, to hear Krishna Katha, to hear the truth regularly. We must, to the degree we accept the prescription of the doctor and take the medicine, to that degree, Krishna consciousness will effectively purify our heart and reestablish us in our original blissful nature. And we can do real good for humanity. And to the degree we whimsically apply Krishna consciousness to our own conceptions, to that degree we are depriving and cheating ourselves of the greatest gift and the greatest treasure in all of the universe. So we should all personally be a good influence so that we don't misguide others. Exams may be coming. Maybe for a week or so, you may have to just chant privately and not. But 6 months? This is all nonsense. This is my opinion, it's all nonsense. Because the final exam of death may come before your final exam in medicine. And then what are you going to do? You're going to tell Yamaraj, I've been studying. And he'll say, well, I have another course for you. Do not take it so lightly. Because the real exam, the final exam, may come at any moment, and you should always be prepared for that. Yes?
giving. We are coming to temple, we are doing everything. Why is it wrong to watch television? Why shouldn't we watch? If they are showing good programs and everything is so nice, it is wrong to watch.
If they're showing good programs, but it depends on what you mean by good program. Good program means you like it, or good program means it's enlightening you. Huh? You like it. Every moment is so precious. There's so much to be done in our own spiritual lives and in the service of God and the world. Why should we waste it? If it's actually a very spiritually enlightening show on television, then there's nothing wrong. But be honest with yourself. Is really that the case? Otherwise, we're simply being programmed by materialistic people to think in a certain way. What you associate with is what you become. What you associate with is what your consciousness becomes. If you associate with devotees and hear the truth from them, your consciousness becomes purified. And as it becomes purified, love, compassion, mercy, all these wonderful qualities awaken. But if you're associating with the influences of materialistic people, your consciousness becomes contaminated and materialistic. Now, who is producing the television shows? And what is their motive? Generally, their motive is to make money. They're producing these shows for one purpose, to exploit you, to exploit your consciousness. And your consciousness becomes exploited and contaminated by associating with that energy. Therefore, it's very dangerous and very detrimental to our spiritual progress to waste our time and be subjecting our consciousness to the most sophisticated and systematic process of spoiling people's consciousness, which is television. The people who produce television shows, especially in India, they're not very sophisticated. But they have the same motive, basically, money. Huh? But in other parts of the world, they are the most highly qualified technicians to administer Maya than anyone else. And you're associating with these people. And you're associating with that energy. And when you see passionate scenes, either on a gross or subtle level, your heart is contaminated with passion. And when you see violent scenes, your heart is contaminated with the propensity for anger and violence. And even if it's a nice, pious scene, still, who are these performers? Are they saintly people? Are they all devotees performing? Most of these actors, they drink, they smoke. Even if they're playing Ram or Sita, they don't even believe in Ram or Sita, most of them. They're materialistic people. You're associating not with just the person they're acting, but you're associating with the person's consciousness who's acting. And your consciousness is being affected by that. Huh? So if it truly is saintly people enacting saintly scenes, then yes, watch the television. But if not, you should not be so inclined toward these things. human society was far more peaceful and happy before there were televisions. It's such a disturbance. Previously, here in this great land of India, in practically every village, town, and city, in every neighborhood, when people came back from their jobs, they would bring their whole family to hear Ram Katha, Krishna Katha, have kirtan, take prasad, then go home and think and dream about the Lord. That is Indian culture. What we do, having satsangs every night, this is not something extraordinary. This is the culture of India. The culture of India is everybody of every village would just come together and just have kirtan and hear Krishna Katha, the message of Krishna, and have prasad. Srila Prabhupada explains, when he was young, everywhere, this is what everyone was doing amongst pious people. But now, everyone's sitting home like this. What enlightenment is there? Just sitting and looking at this tube with so many light vibrations and so much materialistic energy coming through it. Saps your intelligence, saps your creativity. Previously, children, their parents, in order to keep them happy and busy, they would give them so many creative things to do. Little girls would be sewing with their mothers, or they would be cooking with their mothers, and boys, they would be doing so many, they'd be learning so many creative arts and crafts. Now, parents, they just take their child and just look there, stay out of my way, and look, and the child's just like... He's completely destroying any sense of creativity or happiness in the child. The child becomes addicted to television. And I have seen in America, in India I'm sure it's becoming the same way, it's completely destroyed almost every family in America. There's no communication amongst family members. Before television, you have to do something, so you talk. Families don't even know each other anymore. Children come home, they go in their room and turn on their show because they don't want to see what the parents are watching. Now, and even if you're all in the same room, what communication is there amongst the family members? In kirtan, everyone is personally relating with one another, right? You're looking at each other, you're dancing with one another, you're feeling, you're enthusing one another. You're sharing your love of God together. It's a wonderful experience. But when people just sit in a room to watch television, what is the relationship? What's developing amongst each other? We're all just sitting there like this. Sometimes they're going like this. Television is destroying families, destroying individuals, destroying society, and destroying the world. And yet, everybody wants one. It's the most amazing secret weapon of Maya. She places one in every home, and then she takes over that household through the television set. It's like the deity. We go to the temple like this, and they're like this. Becomes like television is like a god for people. So in this way, we don't recommend it. Unless there genuinely is something nice, then it's very nice. But the problem is when there's something nice, then you're sitting there, and when the nice thing ends, you just want to see what's next. Maybe this will also be nice. You know, this is the way Maya works. Once she hooks you, She'll give you something nice just to give you faith, but then she'll give you all other things too. So it's, we should, we're not saying it's the worst thing in the world, but it is very detrimental if we're spiritually serious about life. We should not waste our time. Better to sit and read the scriptures, better to come to kirtan, better to chant the holy names, better to do some seva. Because every moment is so valuable. Of reading?
Reading.
If you have the capacity to study and to read, you should utilize that capacity to purify your life. It is very, very important. If a person is illiterate, that person can become perfectly Krishna conscious just by sitting and hearing from others and chanting the holy names. But if you have the capacity to read, you should know it's a gift of God. And if you don't use that gift properly, then you'll use it improperly. These books are so important. We must hear. It's very important. Because unless our intelligence is convinced, as we were saying, then we will not be able to have the determination required to continue in our spiritual life. Because in materialistic society, there are so many arguments, so many excuses, and so many alternatives being presented at all times. You have to have conviction. You have to have a philosophical conviction if you want to continue on in the face of all of these other arguments. Everywhere you go, every bill, every hoarding is saying, drink this, eat this, buy this. And everyone you see, by their actions and by their words, are trying to convince you to be the enjoyer and to be the controller. And we're so little. How could we possibly combat against all of this propaganda unless we are convinced? Therefore, with our intelligence, we have to have a philosophical conviction of what is the goal of life and why we should pursue it. And that comes through hearing. And there are basically two processes of hearing. One is in the pravachan, to open our hearts and open our ears and listen. And the other is to read the proper books of transcendental knowledge. And they both are saying the same thing. It is very important, especially in the society we're living today. And if you're in college and you're reading all of these other books with so much material information, which directly has nothing to do with Krishna, in order for you to remain spiritual in your desires, you have to balance it by reading Krishna conscious literatures. Otherwise, all this material knowledge will just carry your intelligence away. You have to balance it by giving Krishna a chance to speak to you also. Yes. Yes, give my microphone. She speaks very soft. Yes. She won't come back to that doctor.
She go to the doctor and do it. Right?
Yes.
So even if the doctor wants her to become to treat her with more devotee, she will not accept it because she is in a stressful condition. So if the doctor first treat her distress, right, in the pain which she is, and then tell her about that not to go and stress again. So she can be preached like after herself. But if the doctor is going to tell her, she is not going to do it. And always the female doesn't want to become pregnant. It sometimes goes upon. So it may not be a mistake, but since it is forced upon, so she has to do, like she has to become pregnant. So now, like, it's not her mistake actually. So, is it not right that first she may get aborted and then you tell her the proper thing, you give her the proper knowledge? Because immediately she won't listen to you. And in Arjuna also, when Krishna was there, so many demons were there. So Krishna never tried to explain to demons that you are doing wrong things. He just fight with them because it was wrong. So in the same way, Krishna, you can explain them, this is wrong way, so you should not do it. And so most of the times the Indian females are puppets in the end of Mata. So they are not the obvious puppets.
So what is the question?
Just that, why abortion is not permitted? Not like the female who knows it and she is doing it, then it's wrong. But the person who doesn't know it.
Doesn't know what?
These things are not to be done. The person doesn't know, or the person who is forced upon. For that,
what?
It somewhat appears to be right.
Appears to be right? By
the question is that.
Generally, Maharaj, if they deal, for example, rape victims.
Yeah.
And like that.
So, yeah.
They are forced to become pregnant. So the question I think is that, what is the harm in aborting that lady? Because not her fault. So, right?
And then the person can become Krishna Manusha, who properly explains it. Not the way.
So your question is whether you should. Well, first give abortion, then preach. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're asking? What? Yes? Five-page question. What? Which page? Actually, you were more clear than this is. Is the question is, should you give abortion or not? That's the question. Anyways. First of all, in an abortion, how many women have actually been raped that come for abortions? What percentage? Probably 1/1,000,000%. Huh? People come for abortions because they have had sex carelessly. But the fact is that there is a human being in that woman's body. Because, you see, Sunita, there's a lot of children that are born that the parents never wanted either. What if a woman was raped and gave birth to a child? And when the child was 3 years old, she murdered him. And then she says to the judge, "Well, I never wanted him." What will the judge say? That whether you want it or not, He is a human being, and you have no right to kill it. Correct? From the Krishna conscious point of view, there's no difference between the child and the embryo and a 10-year-old, 15-year-old, or 50-year-old human being. The child has already come into being. The soul is already in that body, and it's developing. And no one has a right to kill it, for whatever reason, whether it's inside the womb or outside the womb. And if you do, according to the laws of nature, you will be killed. And there's no law that the state can pass that changes the laws of nature. Now, if you want to risk, if you want to be killed to help this lady, but she'll have to be killed too. If she aborts the child, she's going to have to be killed for allowing it done. And the doctor is going to have to be killed for doing it. Do you want to be a part of that? I'm not saying you. I'm saying the person who wrote this letter.
The female says, I don't want to say it that way. The female says, I don't want to say it with the husband. She will be thrown out of the home because it is still predominant.
Anyways, that is a certain karmic thing. It is her karma that she's in that situation, no doubt. But do you want to put yourself in a situation where your karma is hundreds and thousands of times worse than it already is?
The person should know what is karma. The person may not be knowing only because sometimes they may know themselves.
If someone is angry at someone, do you let them kill them and then tell them that it's bad to kill? Is that mercy? The fact is, once conception takes place, that child has a right to live as much as the mother, the father, or anyone else in this world. And no one has a right to interfere with that child's right. And if you do, you will have to accept the consequences. The consequence is murder. So it's not good to get involved in these things. We have a devotee who's a gynecologist. And she told me that 80% of the people that come to her want abortions. I told her, what is the use of being a gynecologist? If you're incriminating yourself in hellish karma, you don't need money so bad. You just treat women who have genuine problems that doesn't involve murder. And you may not make so much money, but you'll have a good life and a good future. Anyways, isn't it clear that abortion means you have to suffer terribly?
Sometimes the pregnant female patient, if she is suffering from chronic disease, then sometimes abortion is advisable.
If you're doing it to literally and honestly save a person's life, you can do it. For no other reason. You can do any reason. But if you want to be free from very, very severe karma, that's the only excuse. If that child is actually threatening the life of the mother, then it is not a very bad karmic thing to do. But if it's simply because of the inconvenience of the mother, then it's very sinful karma. So we do not accept. We cannot. And if we were to tell you something else, we would be cheating you. Because the laws of nature will act no matter what we say. So better we speak the truth and tell you what's happening. If we want to be popular, we can say, oh yes, it's all right. But then, you're the one that suffers. In that condition, it's none of your business. Don't get involved in somebody else's terrible karma. Huh?